All right. Let us continue.
Eggs and bugs. So let's work through these issues. Starting with eggs. So the issue is as follows. The halakha states that when a person would crack an egg and find a blood spot, so that was a cause of serious concern. Why is that such a cause of concern? What's the problem with the blood spot in the egg? However the egg is developing, where exactly is the prohibition as far as that goes? So the reason why the halakha is concerned with blood spots in eggs is because of the fear of a developing embryo. That in the world that used to be, where there was such a thing as real, live, manufactured eggs, where chickens would get together, hens would actually be in contact with the male species, and they would actually have fertilized eggs. So some of those eggs would develop into embryos. Some of them would be taken before they would be able to be developed, and some of them wouldn't. So when you would find a blood spot, there was a concern that it was actually a developing embryo. And a developing embryo is what's known in halakha as a suffik sheret ta'of. It was a suffik, it was unclear, maybe, a sheret ta'of. It was a type of a bird which would be prohibited to eat because it's not yet developed. It's still the status of a sheret. And that blood spot, that developing embryo, might be a problem. And therefore, we had to deal with that when one would find such a blood spot. There's a lot of talk in halakha when you would have a real egg like that, a fertilized egg, and you found a blood spot. How much of the egg do you have to throw away? Not everyone says you have to throw away the entire egg, but the custom is still when you develop mentioned in halakha that one should discard the entire egg and we get rid of it. And the reason for that is, again, because of the serious prohibition that one would have if it were a real developing embryo inside of that egg. That's why the halakha mentions numerous minhagim, which most of us are unfamiliar with, maybe have heard, have not heard, some of our grandmothers may have done, but there was a minhag that's put down in halakha that you always would cook at least three eggs together. You should never cook just one egg. And that is because if you would later define that one of the eggs had this blood spot, you would have a majority of eggs which were kosher, and that would somehow salvage your pot, it would salvage the eggs. It was well known that people used to have egg pots. Meaning of an egg pot is because if you were cooking with it, you would find such an egg with a blood spot, it would otherwise possibly have ruined your pot. So you don't want to use your good meat pot when you're cooking eggs because you always have this fear that when you crack open your egg after cooking it, you would find blood spots. Those are all customs which once existed. If you are familiar with them or you have mothers and grandmothers that once did that, it would be common custom that people did. Today, however, very rare. Some of you are looking like you've never heard of such things. And that's because we don't have such a custom anymore. There's no necessity to do such a thing to only cook three eggs at a time. There's no such thing as having an egg pot. It's not done. The reason for that is because we generally use unfertilized eggs. We don't have real... You can't get them. The reason why I started with that is because, especially in a city in which Jan and Rachel Siegelman reside, it is possible... Not only possible, but actually it happens where people buy real eggs. And I once was over there, forgot why at this point, and had a party gift for whatever I was doing over there, and gave me a little half a carton of six eggs. Went out to the back and I took some eggs, and they were still warm, and here, fresh eggs. I thought it was pretty cool, my wife didn't get it. As cool as I did. But in any case, when you have eggs like that, then you have to be, that's an issue. These are eggs which have been fertilized, and you have to go through the regular process. We'll talk more about it in a moment. But generally, the eggs that you buy in the store are not that way. They are manufactured in a way which is already discussed in the Gemara. It's not that we've come up with something new where we figured out how to get a hen to lay her egg without having a male. Most hens today have never even seen a male in the way that they're mass produced and manufactured. It was already discussed in the times of the Gemara. The sages and the farmers in the times of the Gemara already knew of such a practice. And the eggs that we have today, which are mass-produced, are certainly produced in that manner. Which means that if you don't have a male around, there is no way that you can have a developing embryo in your egg. It's just sort of a fact of life. It's just sort of impossible to create that. Where do blood spots come from? We have blood spots. Some of you, I'm sure, have found blood spots in your egg. So those come from one of two sources. Either it's not really a blood spot, it's what's known as a protein spot, or a protein, something, which is that some microscopic seed from some foreign particle makes its way into developing eggs inside the chicken's body and somehow gets into that as you know, the egg is in development, of course, as we know, with the hard shell around it. That's actually the last stage of the egg development, is when the hard shell forms around the egg. Otherwise, it's just surrounded by veins inside the mother chicken. Right. There was a, over Pesach, actually, one of the, there are a bunch of classes that the Kola would run in the mornings on different topics. One of the topics they did was salting meat. So in order to show how you salt meat, in this case it was chicken, so we slaughtered a chicken, and we had fresh chicken meat, and then we went through the halachas of how you salt it. When we opened up the chicken, there was about 30 eggs inside of the mother at various stages of development. From the entirely hard shell around the egg, ready to be laid within an hour or so, from the time that we had slaughtered it, would have laid that egg, all the way down to these tiny microscopic little yellow balls, which were clearly much earlier than everything in between. Fascinating. There are many, many halachas which discuss, those little balls, by the way, are fleshik. Those are meat. That's considered part of the chicken, and that is what's known as a fleshik egg. There is such a thing in halacha called a fleshik egg, because that's chicken. That's not an egg. That's part of the mother hen. And then as it develops, the halacha describes at what point does that developing little ball of flesh, as it develops, take on its own status of a carved egg. But in fact, you know, the chicken is cut right open, it's back, you know, you can make a look. But you never have this. Yeah, it's very, very, very interesting. Fascinating stuff. So what happens is, very often, as that little ball of an egg is not covered in the shell, it's just exposed inside the animal's little belly as it develops along the path. So sometimes what happens is things float, maybe ate something, if things are floating around the chicken's body, like all creatures, things are microscopic little organisms are floating there, and it gets caught up in the development of the egg, and as the egg develops, and the shell forms around it, and it's a hard shell, and then it's still limp, and you crack it open, and there's something there, which is much more common in a blood spot, today's egg, or whatever some of you find that I was described as a thick jelly-like substance. Sometimes you can actually see a little seed-like almost in the middle of it. If it's in the yolk of the egg, then you just see the little seed. If it's in the white, it looks like there's some form of a jelly substance somewhere. Totally good, they're totally fine. It's not a problem. It's not any form of blood. It's nothing. It's just things that develop along the process of the egg developmental processes in the chickens. That's the most common thing you find. You do sometimes find blood spots, and it's red and it looks like blood, and in fact it is blood. The halacha is that it's mother blood, because it's not a developing embryo. What it is along that line of development of the egg, a blood vessel bursts in the mother hen. As there are certain, I was looking at this stuff, which is interesting. You check both Star K and the OU website, discuss where the things come from. As the egg goes through, some goes through a process, there are tons of blood vessels which surround the egg. As I mentioned, that's why in that stage it's still considered a fleshig egg. And sometimes some of those things, they burst, they pop, whatever. There's a lot of blood around, just like the human embryo, which develops surrounded by blood. So the chicken egg also, as it develops, is surrounded by lots of blood. Sometimes you have a vein or a something pops, and you get a little bit of blood in that area, and that's where it's on. That blood is mother. It's not a problem. Our custom today is we discard that blood anyway, but that's where the blood spots come from, because it's not a fertilized egg. It's not a developing embryo, because unless, again, you bought organic or natural eggs, the egg that you buy from the store today, it's not possible to be a fertilized egg, since there are no male chickens around these females. So we discard the blood anyway because of the fact that it's blood. There's a Maris Ayin issue, since there once was a time where people did it, again, even today, where you have eggs that have no developing embryos. Our custom is to discard that blood spot if you find it. Now, Rabbi Stein pointed out to me that the Ikar Halacha is that you only have to discard the blood spot. If you have an egg, and today, in our modern world of processed eggs, unfertilized form, you find the blood spot. You do not have to throw away the entire egg. You can simply remove the little blood spot and get rid of it, because the blood spot itself is really mother. The rest of the egg is for sure mother. You can just simply get rid of that little part, and it's fine. I did see that it was in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein, so that here it was a good practice to dispose of the entire egg. It's not a big expense, it's not a major loss, but it's not required. If you only have three eggs left, you can make it whatever, you gotta run to the store. You just have to get rid of the blood splatter. That's totally fine. You don't even really have to do that, but that's our cup. We get rid of that, and the rest of it is, you definitely should do that. If you can get rid of the whole egg, fine. But, as such, the pots and other eggs that are cooked with it are fine. The general used to be a time that if you had, you cooked up a pot of 6, 7, 8, 9 hard-boiled eggs, and one of them you found the real blood spot, you had serious questions about all the other eggs that were in the pot. You had questions about your pot. It was a whole big shot, and you go to the row, what do I do now? I found the blood spot. None of that applies today. You know, regular eggs that are unfertilized, if you find the blood spot in a batch of hard-boiled eggs, totally fine. It's not an issue because of the fact that it's not a real developing embryo. Now, as far as checking eggs go, so everybody knows that you have to check eggs. That's like standard practice that you need to do it. But I do want to point out that the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, writes that you're allowed to roast an egg and then eat it. Now, the significance of saying that is that when you roast an egg, obviously you roast it in its shell. And then when you eat it, you're not really sure what you're going to be biting into. There's no requirement that after you've roasted your egg, you know, you can smash it. But you don't have to do that. You're allowed to eat an egg that's been roasted. The significance being, you're allowed to rely on what's known as rove. Rove is a significant majority of eggs that do not have blood spots. Under those circumstances, you're allowed to do so and eat your roasted egg even though it had not been checked. That is applicable today certainly as well. I was talking about fertilized eggs, that you are allowed to rely on such a principle without checking yours. I know you're looking up, not in my kitchen, no one's going to do that. But today that's certainly true. I mean, as you think about all the thousands of eggs you've cracked over your lifetime, you know, the amount of times you found the blood spot, and again, the blood spots we're talking about are the broken artery, you know, they're not a real blood spot, it's rare, and so we don't even have the real type of blood in our eggs that are probably, there is no developing embryo in these types of eggs. So this is relevant, you know, and you're on a camping trip, and you're not sure if an egg was checked, and you're in someone's house, you're not sure if they checked eggs or not. Well, that's not, we'll talk about when we get to salad in a minute. If you're at someone's house and you're not really sure whether or not they checked an egg, that's not a problem, you will have what to rely on. The fact that it's not commonly found, that if it was either if they're on Mar, right, explicitly, the meaning is to check during the day when it's possible. So if it's daylight hours that are Mar, and he's talking before it was clear and great system of light, daylight hours, and you could check, but Ramah said, if that's what you should do, you should always check your eggs. But if you're in a circumstance, certainly today, again, with our unfertilized eggs, where you couldn't check, you forgot to check, or whatever it was, that is totally fine, and you are allowed to do so. When I was in Yeshiva, I haven't seen this really since, but they used to have, at breakfast, all the cereals had nothing. They had like 3 or 4 different types of eggs. They had scrambled eggs, and soft-boiled, and medium-boiled, and hard-boiled. And I never seen this soft-boiled egg before, but apparently, right, you crack it open, and then you just scoop the stuff in. And you weren't always sure, again, you can't really search. You could search only the top level. You're allowed to eat those without having them really been checked before, based on this principle. And again, certainly in today's day and age with our unfertilized eggs. Yeah.
I just
want to
know, I mean, why do you have to check them out? Why do you have to do that?
It's part of the Maasai issue. Oh. And that's where it is. You know, it's one of the best. We have that covered. We generally do, even if you find the blood spot, we generally do throw it away. We are looking for it. And, you know, I don't. Yeah, sort of. But you're right. In other words, at the end of the day, there is no real bona fide issue. But we do sort of check them anyway.
I thought we had the pot.
Because I thought it was the residue
around the egg that
may
not been cleaned, and that's why we used to special pot. Avoiding mammal pot.
As far as I know, it was
because
of the blood.
Right.
You can use it. I'm just saying the reason why we had a separate pot was to keep our regular meat and dairy pots away from them so that we don't have to worry about them getting ruined by any blood spot that was found later. Alright, let's go on to the bug issue. The bug issue is much more significant. Now, I handed you all a half copies. If you didn't get, I can make more. I think maybe there'll be some copies later, so there's one less. But is there enough? When I spoke to Rabbi Stein about it, just over some basics, he told me that, you know, the AKC's policy is basically straight out of the Starcade policy, so I simply, and we'll go through a little bit together, but what I wanted you to have, this is straight off their website, you can go get it yourself, at least you have it in front of you now, at least for tonight, their requirements for vegetable checking, and we'll go through a little bit of it, okay, let's start just with this little sheet that I gave you. Most important thing to realize is that the Torah prohibits bugs that are visible to the eye. That's what's prohibited. Torah says you're not to eat bugs. So as you all know, whether you like it or not, but every single time you eat any particle of food, there are live organisms on that food. That's the reality. That doesn't harm us, but they're there. Why are we not concerned with that? Because if you can't see it, it doesn't exist. That's just the rule as it works. But we do need to make sure that we can't see it. But really, it's time to point out that you don't need to check with a magnifying glass or you're not obligated to do that. If you wouldn't be able to see it otherwise, you're not obligated to do that. We'll talk a lot about having a light box. If you don't yet have one, it's highly recommended. They're available online, so I've taken website, other websites, you can get them. It makes it a lot easier and quicker to find the bugs that are visible to the eye. But if you have a bug which you otherwise would not be able to see, you're not required to search for those. Now, this entire topic of bugs is unique in the world of practice. And a lot of interesting issues which will come up as we go through this because of that. Most things in kashrus are either kosher or they're not kosher. And it's pretty black and white. Non-kosher items are those which are derived from non-kosher animals. If any of those items end up in your food product is now not kosher. If your product does not have any of those items in it, your product is kosher. That's the way that it goes. Bugs, and the checking for bugs, is a whole different can of worms, if you will, because it's almost possible to say there are no bugs there. Not almost, sometimes we do need to do that, but we don't always have to get to that stage. It's a matter of, I need to make sure that there aren't bugs there. So how many times do I have to check before I'm allowed to say, in halakha, this is sufficient. This is reasonably bug-free. I don't have to be concerned. Meaning, just like we said by the egg, why is it that you are allowed to eat an egg that had not been checked for a blood spot, even when you're talking about a fertilized egg? Because it's not common enough to find a blood spot that it would tell you you're not allowed to eat this egg without checking. If it were really common to find blood, well, then that would be a different story. Then you'd be prohibited from eating it until you check. But as long as the majority of eggs are blood-free, you can eat without having checked. So bugs are going to get into that issue. There are different types of food which are variably infested, so to speak, with bugs. How common is it to find a bug crawling on your sweet potato? I've never seen one. So without really more than a quick glance, you know, seeing it and crawling on it, you're allowed to eat that without checking because I don't expect to find anything there. Well, as you go up in the gradations of leafy foods, how much do I need to check is going to depend on the type of food that we're talking about and when I can say this is good enough that I'm allowed to eat it and when do I need to further check. And that's going to be part of the discussion. That's this idea that our obligation is to check and make reasonably sure, we'll define what that means, reasonably sure, that there aren't any bugs. Those criteria depend on the prevalence of bug infestation with each of the different products. So when you just look at just the topics that you have here, you have, you know, your common leafy vegetables that's on your starcade sheet, and you have your fluoridated vegetables, and your herbs, and your asparagus, versus other things, you're at the bottom of that second page, you know, that only require washing and a visual check, and don't require any inspection. There's certain foods, it just depends on how much do we expect and are we concerned that you're going to find stuff. And when we suddenly get word that comes out of the earth, strawberries this season are off limits. That's because there's a greater infestation, and we'll talk about what that means for us as far as when we get words like that and what to do with that. Alright, let's go through some of the basics of the checking process and how that works. Now, Rabbi Stein made a big deal when I spoke with him, and I want to pass that on to all of you about the checking process. You'll see, I'm going to go through again in a few minutes on the start case sheet exactly what you should do, and separating the leaves, and you rinse, and you dunk in water, and you put soap and all that. But Stein wanted to be very clear that there's no such thing as a magic potion as far as getting rid of bugs. And if you do this, then your food is good. As long as you wash and dunk and rinse, and let sit, then you're fine. All of those things And all those processes that we're going to talk about are in order to allow you a reasonable check to ensure that there are no bugs. But just because you did it, I rinsed, I rubbed, I scrubbed, that doesn't mean that it's okay. That means, oh, now you're in a good place to check and put your stamp on it to say, this has been checked, I know that there are no bugs on it. The main thing is the checking. All of this washing ritual is to put you in a place you'll be able to check. He says he feels all these questions all the time, because we as Jews are very into our shiur, into the exact measures of what we need to do. So if I tell you you need to eat your matzah between 2 minutes and 3.5 minutes, and this is the amount that you need to eat, so you sit there with your watch and make sure that I've eaten in the right amount of time. So someone reads online and says, you should soak your strawberries for 10 minutes. So they sit there with their watch and they say, like, I mean, it's only 7 minutes and 45 seconds. It's not enough. It's 10 minutes. So there's also, how much do I need to do that? You need to get it clean. If you find that if you scrub extra hard and you scrub less, you'd rather let it soak, your task is to check it. You need to, before you put something on your table, which is in the classification of the type of food that's generally infested, needs an inspection, a leafy vegetable, strawberry, and the like, you need to be able to say, I've checked them, they're good. What do you need to do to be able to check them? Well, if you don't wash them at all, it's hard to check and a lot more to check. You need to wash them. What's the exact procedure? The guidelines that will allow it to be done really well, but it's no magic formula. Now, when we talk about all, they generally should be washed with soap. So all soap is valid of a Steiner, and you got to be glad that it is. That the material, the chemical that's in the soap, that scrub that allows it to separate the dirt from your hands or from the dishwashing detergent or from the dust, that's all really the same. People are not maybe so they everyone's people that you get a veggie wash or whatever it may be. It's all dishwashing soap is the same as those things. They all have the exact same ingredient in it which allows the things to get separated, the dirt and the bugs. And the bugs come off it just like the dirt comes off your hand when you rub it in those soaps. When you have a kick out of this, the conscious agencies would much prefer people to use hand soaps or dishwashing soaps rather than the veggie soaps. That's because there's a scent and an odor that are put in the cleansers, because people like to have clean smelling dishes after they run it through, and people don't like eating that. So if you wash your strawberry with your hand soap, you're going to do a much better job of scrubbing it to make sure that it's off. And as far as getting your vegetable clean from bugs, the conscious agency would much rather you use some type of material that you don't want to eat, because you're going to be much more careful as far as scrubbing it off afterwards than if you use a veggie wash, which is safe for your food and safe for this, but you're not as careful. But it really doesn't matter what you're using when we talk about washing stuff. Okay, let's jump to the Starkey website, the sheet, just for a few things, just to get to the basic things as to what they say, and we'll look at some of the other things that the Shiny mentioned to you that I'd like to share with you. So let's start from the top. They give you this list of the common leafy vegetables that require your inspection. So what that basically means, that it requires inspection, is that we assume all of these are going to be infested. That's just the reality. There are going to be bugs, and if you look carefully enough, with your own two eyes, you'll see that. Actually, Kongan, if you're interested, by the way, also, if you go to the website, the site can put together a number of short videos. I think there's 3 or 4 of them. Each one is 3 to 4 minutes long, in which they actually take you, and they break up all the leaf, and they run under the sheet, the bugs, they show the different types of bugs, and what you're looking for, and how to wash and rub, and if you're interested, you can certainly go there and get your little tutorial from that. But if you buy any of these raw vegetables from a store, you bring it home and it's just totally raw, you are going to be required to search them leaf by leaf in order to be able to eat them. So they have their number A, leaf by leaf inspection. Basically, you're separating the leaves, you're soaking them in water, and then doing a leaf by leaf inspection. Again, pointing out, just because you soaked it in water, and even if it was soapy water, that doesn't give you the ability to now say my leaf is bug-free. That gives you now the ability to check. Now, this is where everyone's familiar with a light box. You're not familiar with it? Heard of them? Have them? So if you have, highly recommend it. I don't think it's a major investment, but makes checking significantly easier to be able to do. It goes faster, and you can deal with a much greater sense of confidence as you spread out the leaf over the light box And in 3 minutes to Westman, you can see clearly what's going on over there and whether or not it is or is not.
How
about great? You go to Stockade's website, they'll have links for that. Now, there's such a thing which I'm not going to go through, but there's what's known as the chazaka check for larger volumes of leafy vegetables. This is what goes on more in the catering business and in restaurants, in which you check the halacha described, you can create a chazak, you can create a pattern, and if you check, now there are places where we do use this in halacha, I'll mention one of them in a moment, where if you check 3, say, heads out of a batch of lettuce, and those are entirely bug-free without having washed them beforehand. You know, you take 3 heads and you see that they're bug-free, then you can establish that entire batch is bug-free, and you'd be allowed to eat it. There's discussion, there's debate in the Kashrus agency whether or not you can create such a chazaka on a bag. Let's say you buy a bag of lettuce from the supermarket that does not have a hafshah. There's no Sarkei or the OB or the other agencies which put their hafshahs on a bag of lettuce. They don't have one of those. So you buy regular. Can I take that bag and search 2 or 3 fistfuls of that shredded or cut up lettuce and establish that the whole bag is okay, saving me the tax going through a whole heap? So, it seems to me, if I understood this time correctly, that where the OU has policies that they would not accept creating a chazakah on a bagged lettuce, that once that is considered where you expect to find it, as a hundred cents, I would not recommend doing that. If you're in a pinch, you can call your local rabbi to work through that. But there is such a concept of creating a chazakah that Rabbi Steinberg, you will use, for example, say, by asparagus. Sticking out of that, you have 2 parts of asparagus that have to be checked. It has little triangular shaped leaves along the sides. So out of every little fistful, you're going to take 3 of those and lift each. You have to take out of those 3, lift them all up and see that there are no bugs hiding underneath. And washing asparagus isn't going to do the job because the bugs hide underneath those little things. You need to lift them all up, and if you don't find any bugs in the 3 of those asparagus, then you do the tips as well. Agitating them, which we'll discuss. Once I started, let's just get down to it. Page 2 is asparagus. You have.
So if you use the pure, I always
kill this thing. Yeah, that's fine. Right. No, it's because it's right. It's like a potato. Simply washing it is fine. The main issue with asparagus is the bugs hiding underneath. But just continue with the asparagus. So in other words, you check under a few of the triangular shaped leaves on the side of the asparagus. And this is 3 stalks in a bunch. That's the header with it. Here's an example. The reason why I skipped this is where you can use this concept of chazaka, which your little bunch, I don't know how much comes in a bunch, 10 of them, that comes in a bunch. You pull out 3 of them, you check under the triangular shaped leaves on the side of the asparagus. If you do find a bug, so then that establishes this batch as having bugs. Does it mean you have to throw out the whole batch? No, it just means that you're not going to have to check it. I now have reason to assume I've found a bug in my asparagus, so if I want to use these asparagus, I now have to check them all.
So the tip also can
be manifested, no? Yes. Yeah, I'll get there in 1 second. Now, if you don't find in your 3 stalks any bugs hiding underneath those triangular-shaped leaves, so then you move on to the tips. So you wash them thoroughly first under the strong stream of water and agitate it in a bowl. So you fill the bowl with water and then you rub them up with under the bowl, which would shake out, especially being submerged in water, you shake it out under after that, and then you examine the water to see that it is insect free. Okay, let's take a break and discuss what does it mean to examine the water. How do you do this? We'll see this in a number of different types of vegetables in which the way that you check is by using a bowl of water, putting the leaf or whatever they were talking about in the bowl, agitating it, rubbing it around, and then checking it. This is particularly true with broccoli and cauliflower as well. It would be the primary way to check that. So there are 3 ways to check that water. So now when you do that, you're going to have lots of stuff floating around the water. And you need to check whether or not any of those are bugs. So does anyone clear what I'm talking about? Yes, sir. So Rabbi Stein told me that he generally does not even bother checking for the first 1 or 2 rinses when you agitate your, say, broccoli or cauliflower, because so much stuff comes off of the tips of the broccoli.
Yeah,
it's the tips of the cauliflower, the broccoli, and you're never going to hear that. You'll spend more time picking through each one. So he would generally, you know, he dumps a head of broccoli kappa or agitates the whole area, dumps out the water. We'll do it a second time, dump out the water, unless it's not, you don't find anything there. And then usually by the third time, then you have what to actually check for. So now I have this bowl of water. How do I check whether or not I have any bugs floating around in this water? So there's three methods that you can check for this, and this is back on the sheet that I handed out, to check the water. First thing would be is to see if you could actually, if you have good enough eyes and a good enough system, you're just responsible for looking into the water and seeing if anything is there. That's a difficult way sometimes to be able to really tell if anything is floating around. If it's a darker bug, you'd see it, but otherwise, the ways to do it are to place that bowl, put it in a glass bowl, and put that bowl over a light box. That will shine the light through, and you'll be able to pick out through that if there are any bugs floating through that water. Or you could pour it through a white cloth. Get yourself one of those napkins, the cloth napkins, a light cloth napkin, just kind of a handkerchief, whatever you have. Just you have a designated bug checking cloth. You know, you lay it down over whatever, pour the water through, and you'll see if there's anything there. And if you do that with a sample of water, that's fine. You now have established that this cauliflower doesn't have any bugs in it, and your cauliflower broccoli is now good to be eaten. Yeah, there. Right there. Can it grow in anything or anything specific? We'll get to that. No, you only need it twice. You only need it once. No, what Stein is saying is that he doesn't even bother. Let's say you want to use a handkerchief method. He doesn't even bother taking that first bowl where you put the cauliflower or broccoli in and the agitator. There's so much stuff that comes off the broccoli or the cauliflower, and it's even after you pour it through, it's going to be like, you have to search through what's just a little piece of green broccoli, what's an actual bug. So he just dumps that water out. Maybe sometimes a second, even a third time, and then it'll pour that water. And once you see it's pretty clear, then you can pour that water and see if there are any bugs on it. And the rest of that head is the second. And this is not to establish a chazaka for a whole batch, because clearly you might have dumped down 20 bugs in the first dumping of the water. This is just for this particular head of broccoli. I can now establish I've rinsed it three times. Maybe I did rinse off 10 or 15 bugs, and it's totally fine. We expect there to be bugs in a head of broccoli or cauliflower. So what you're doing is making sure they are no longer there. So you dump it in the water, you agitate the whole area, you dump it out. Maybe there were bugs on it, maybe there weren't, something wasn't worth looking. Do it again, dump it out, do it again. If when you dump that water up, there are no bugs in there, you have now established, according to halacha, that you don't have any bugs in that head of broccoli or cauliflower, and you can eat it. So same thing with the asparagus tips. Once you've looked under the triangular-shaped leaves on the side of them, or peeled them off, whatever you've done, same thing with the asparagus in the water, and you agitate the head. It's probably going to have to do more than that. I don't know. I can't imagine. Maybe what they would, the little bits would come off there also. And then you run that through the test. You put the bowl on top of the light box or dump the water out. And if you don't have any bugs in there, those asparagus are considered bug free and good to be in.
If it's so still in my head, guess I would not serve some asparagus or cauliflower broccoli for certain people because they don't hold anything back. They won't eat fresh any of that.
So they have that choice. It's their prerogative to say, I don't want to rely on the fresh. I'll feel a walk off. I wanted to give you in writing the star K said, fine. You do not need to feel that. You do not need to feel that. I assume as a wonderful Jewish lover, you have other things to feel bad about. This one, don't worry. We have plenty of stuff that we seem to make ourselves feel bad for. This one, you do not need to say that about. I had someone in my house just last week, or two months ago, had something, I didn't even want to have asparagus on the table. I said something like, oh, I didn't know you could have asparagus. Not quite excited, but so I'll tell you where it comes from. And I'll use this and shift into the strawberry discussion as where that idea comes from. Strawberries are very difficult to check as well, because the strawberries lack the little seeds, and then there's the area underneath the leaves where the little buggies like to hide. If you go to the website, they'll show you the white little bugs that like to hang out on the strawberries. So you need to check them. So the way that you check them is the same basic idea. Do you have a special thing on strawberries? I don't remember. Again? Yeah. Strawberry. That's the same basic idea. So what do you do? You fill your basin with water and some cleanser or special strawberry wash, whatever it is. You have your soap, and you soak the strawberries while agitating the water. So you put the strawberries in, you agitate the strawberries, you rinse them off. You're not really checking the water in this case. It's not like where there are hot, you just need to check the strawberry. You know, they rinse off the strawberry, and it's preferable to cut the top off with a small amount of the flesh because, again, the leaves are really where they hide off, and now your strawberries are good to go. So, as Einstein pointed out to me, he said, if you do this, you're allowed to eat your strawberry. You know, you took your strawberry, and you rinsed it off, and you cut off the top, and you looked at it, there are no bugs, strawberries you can eat. So he said, you're going to hear soon, it's going to be coming out, and no strawberries this season. So, what in essence that means is that these strawberries are infested for whatever reason, based on how they use their insecticides or pesticides or whatever it is didn't work for this particular type of that of the little insect, and they're infested. So what happens is as follows: a Kashrus agency. I think he quoted this from one of the chuvas on Kimas from Ramosha. I don't want to say it over right, so I'll be quoting. What happens is for a Kashrus agency to put their stamp, their star K, their OU, their OV on something is to say, we are sure there are no bugs in it. That's what's required to be able to say that. For an individual, their responsibility is to say, I did what the halacha required of me. These are good enough. So what will happen is, and when there's a major problem, the Kashrus agency say, just in a mass system, we're not comfortable saying strawberries this season are good. And that in the general system of the way that things are washed and cleaned, that we can put our stamp on it and say, you can eat it without doing anything because we've checked it for you, we can't do that. We won't. It's too much of a problem. We won't put our stamp on the lettuce. You can't get back to lettuce anymore because there's too much of a infestation problem and no Kashrus agency is willing to. Does that mean you can't go to the store and buy a fresh head of an iceberg and check it? You can't find a bag of lettuce anymore with the voucher during certain times because it's infested. So yeah, because they're not willing to put, that doesn't mean I, as an individual, can't check. Doesn't mean I can't buy a head, rinse, soak, look, and say this doesn't have bugs. There's no such thing as some Kashrus agency anywhere, Baltimore, New York, St. Louis, telling me there are bugs on my leaf in front of me. That's impossible, right? They are able to say, I can't put a stamp on this and tell you it's fine. I can't do that because this is too much of a problem. So that's the same with the strawberries. They're going to say strawberries aren't infested. That doesn't prevent me from washing my strawberries, looking at it, there is no bug on this, I'm allowed to eat it. Aren't strawberries infested? Yes, they're infested so that no Kashrus agency is willing to say, you know, they're okay. But it doesn't mean that any individual, mashgiach, or person in their own home, that's what we all are functioning as in our own kitchens, is a mashgiach, can say this strawberry is fine. So that's where you get this idea. You know, asparagus pits are out. There's an idea, because, you know, maybe for a caterer to rely on that, they have to rely on X, Y, or Z, because they can't check every single asparagus. If the person can say, I don't want to rely on a chazaga. You know, if the caterer is going to use 500 batches of asparagus, and they only check 10 of them, and that and halacha says it's fine, I don't want to rely on that. And the person has the right to say that. I want to have a standard for myself that says, I don't want to rely on that kind of chazaka. I want to make sure that everything's been checked. That's totally fine. But you as an individual, if you check everything, there's no reason in the world that you couldn't eat it. Now, I shouldn't say there's no reason in the world. There are such things that if you look right above the strawberries, there's the vegetables that cannot be checked. So artichoke hearts and Brussels sprouts cannot be checked because of the way that they are layered inside. It is just impossible to get in there and check both of those two products without destroying your entire, you won't have anything left. But that's why it can't be checked. But that does not apply. You'll notice not on that list. You cannot find strawberries. You will not find asparagus. You will not find broccoli. It's not on that list.
The difference between artichoke and artichoke heart.
Correct. Artichokes are just the, artichoke hearts are where, you know, the layer is.
Right, so you're saying you don't need the heart.
You cannot check an artichoke heart. Correct. But there's no such thing as a can There's some recipe. Remember, there's one of the look for artichoke heart cans. You can go to the store, you find canned artichoke hearts. And there's no such thing as a kosher canned artichoke. You cannot check them. So if you go to Kroger Republic, there is a brand that has a form of a hasher, and I found that it's from Peru. It's a funny thing. I called Rabbi Stein and I said, is this a reliable hasher? They have canned artichoke hearts. And I know that this person has been asking if I can find if there's such a thing. So he said, no, it's not really so reliable. And the very fact that they put their stamp on an artichoke heart makes them unreliable. Right? You cannot check them.
There used to be a brand at the farmer's market that had, I don't even remember what it was now, but it was reliable. And then it came off of this label, and it was artichoke heart. Marinated, so I thought it was because of the vinegar.
Vinegar killed them off.
You can get marinated orange.
Right, you'll see if it captures from Peru.
It's a kosher.
In
a heart? It's just bomb. Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know if it's hard. It's more than hard. You can see like the leaves come out. It's an orange quarter. Yeah. And you can buy, I think it's Seasons brand. It's right there, so the heart will pop. It's been there for years.
I heard both from Rabbi Stein, this is 7 months ago, and then, David Hatwasser, I wasn't surprised at all to see it, that you cannot check them.
That is so peculiar.
Unless it's the fact that it's marinated. I will get into that. I will look into that.
They're there.
They're
pretty.
So the frozen that there is fall. It used to be, for those of you who remember, not so long ago, any frozen vegetable was fine. You did not need a hasher. It was by definition okay. So somebody actually even told us some reason. They thought that the reason was because of the freezing process, the bugs explode in the freezer. They cannot exist. No, that's ridiculous. That's not true. The reason why you can buy frozen vegetables is because when a company freezes its vegetables, they go through a very thorough washing process, a very rigorous process, that they themselves, nothing to do with kashrus. And because of what, I don't know why, when they sell frozen goods, it's steamed, it's washed, it's checked, there's a whole inspection agency where they have, like, U.S. government officials inspect, USDA inspecting it as if they were mashgiach, because it's, somehow, I don't know why, when it's frozen, that's what they do. No, but they don't do that when they bag their lettuce. You know, when you buy Kroger brand lettuce, they didn't triple necessarily. They didn't necessarily wash that in a way where they check for bugs. They wash it. This washing was different. It was washed. It was checked. So frozen vegetables were considered okay. What happened is that it's not really regulated. So different companies became washing it less, and this one was washing it more, and this one wasn't reliable, this one wasn't reliable. So it became an entire tumult. The OU always was a little bit more machmir than the Starkei. The OU used to say you always needed a hasher. Even years ago, they always had split to the policy. They weren't comfortable with that. The Starkei used to be comfortable with it, and now the Starkei has since taking that back, and if some of you are familiar with that, this is the latest news within the last couple months or so, where frozen vegetables are no longer recommended. That's the word that we use. We don't recommend it. So that's what I'm saying. What does that mean? Did I ask them a couple weeks ago? What do you mean not recommended? They said, well, this is the same idea. It's washed. It's washed. It's washed pretty well. But it's not washed so well that we, as a kashrus agency, can say we're totally fine with it. It's still good, but it's not all the way up there. So, for example, I said, what should I buy? So I said, you can buy it. It certainly, there's nothing else available. You can buy it. The stuff that is available is five times more expensive you can buy also. And both of them are going to start, they change their policy. So on the shelves right next to your Giant's brand of frozen broccoli was your Botec frozen at the same price. So like, what was the big deal? You made one, the Botec, it used to be they were the same level. Now the Botec's a little bit better check, so go with that. It's not available here. There's no selection. Expensive. So it's not recommended, but it's fine. And for example, the restaurants here, any restaurant or caterer still buys regular frozen Kroger brand broccoli because it's okay. And as I put it, it's far better checked than a individual checking by hand a massive amount. It's still better quality. It's not just, yeah. But if I was saying the caterer, you can't buy frozen spinach, you have to buy fresh spinach and somebody has to check it. It's still going to be a better level of checking for the frozen than to have an individual have to sit there and check all of this massive amount of frozen spinach. So still, the restaurants are still using your regular Kroger brand. So the reason why it's safe, I recommend it, it should be on the radar screen as something where if a person says, I want to increase that standard that I have in my kitchen, this is a place to do it. So if I've checked my asparagus, personally, I've checked it, I've soaked them, I've checked the water, you're not gaining anything by not eating it, because you checked it. It's bug-free. Halacha says it's ready to go. I took my strawberries, I soaked it, put the soap in, I agitated it, I put it out, I looked, no bugs, eat it. Frozen Kroger spinach is on the radar screen for something that if you wanted to take on something, there's another level beyond that. It should be on our radar screen that this is not the end of the line. There is a level of checking that still exists that would be better than what's out there, but it's not required. It is sufficient to have what you have, and you can still buy it. Anytime you go to a restaurant, if you really do go to a restaurant, and the restaurants are under AKC, you're going to be buying and eating Kroger frozen spinach. That's what they have. But it should be on the radar screen that there is a level of a high level of checking, and one can check it yourself in the same manner. You can take your frozen spinach, defrost it in your bowl at home, soak it, and then pour the water over a cloth. And you can do the same thing. And it's okay to do so. It's not required, but it should be on the radar screen that because of the infestations that are going on, and the fact that the frozen industry is not regulated as to how much they wash and how it's checked, that there's room to still be careful with that. Yeah.
I have done that. I have checked it, especially potato. Mm-hmm. Salted. Good. Yeah.
Not as hard as salted. Right.
Did the
press of
vegetables, did that only include ones with broccoli? How would
it be infested?
Like kind of squashes
and
carrots,
big
and corn?
That's never eaten anyway. Correct. Right.
Are mine.
Right. Just like when you go to the store, you're eating, right? One of the generals, because that has the status of it, just infested type of product. Right.
You know, spinach in a bag. I can't find it even though we don't need spinach. Because our mother wants to eat
that
spinach.
The frozen?
No,
it's
fresh.
Right, that has to be checked. That requires a checking.
It doesn't matter. It was cut with somebody else's knife.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Same with the spring.
The reason why that's fine, by the way, is because the major industries where it's being mass produced, they have a designated spinach cutting knife. They're not cutting.
The spring mixes that special vegetable stuff fresh.
Yeah, anything that's on this list of something that requires checking, if it's fresh and it's not under any scuffle, would require a checking. If it's frozen, so then it's still okay, but it's recommended to need to check again.
Confusion is, though, they can see where they cut carrots and celery, like, you know, you
can
buy the little
packages.
I
don't
get those
because
I thought you couldn't eat anything that was cut
by
a knife.
That's fine. I'm not kidding. You can eat cut baby carrots out of Pesach.
Wow.
Yeah. My wife was dancing in the kitchen when I told her that.
If you want to eat the
I got lost on if you want to eat Brussels sprouts.
You want to eat Brussels sprouts. You don't like completely
separate them.
And then check the ones you would have.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of confusion which comes to all these vegetables in Israel.
Yes.
So you just talk about that. I mean, there's so many vegetables, but they're not even strawberries in Israel. I mean, that's the word of the street.
I really don't know. I know that Israel is different because the whole bug situation is different. Flowers and stuff, everything needs to be checked. It's just a different, you know, heads need to be checked. Wow. It's different. Israel, bug, that part of the world, the culture is just different. So I'm really not speaking about how that works there. I don't know why there would be such a thing as like, if you can't eat a strawberry. I don't know why. I don't know why it shouldn't be that an individual can check it. And there's no, oh, like, look, there's a strawberry. I washed it. I rinsed it. I cut the top off. I looked at it. I can't understand why there would be such a thing that I in my home, okay, a restaurant, a kosher agency doesn't want to put a badass on it. I get it. But I don't know where in Alaka we take it away as the individual to say, I have nehemonis, I'm a holy Jew, I'm allowed to check and say this is not full of bugs. Look, there's nothing on it. I don't know why there'd be such a thing. I'm not saying there is or isn't. I don't know. I'm not familiar with what's going on over there. I don't know why there should be. But I don't know a lot of things why there should or shouldn't be. Next show. Right. Okay, that wasn't all that's read. If you have other questions, please send it to me and we have to go through. That's where this idea, when they say that it's not recommended, would say that would be another, again, like if you checked the strawberry and looked at it, like it's recommended. Okay, so there you want to take a look, right? That would be an idea. That would be a place. If you bought frozen strawberries, yes, given that today we know that there are more problems than it's not anyway, that would be where. Right, so wash them.
I also think about people are growing their own things in their own garden. There's no insecticides, and there's no chance you're going to get more bugs, but you're still going to eat it, check it.
Right.
And the difference, wash it, check it.
Yeah.
You're going to check it,
and the bugs are going to
eat it.
Yeah, when we went strawberry picking, we went.